Gemara says, and of Yudam and Aleph, we just saw the idea of Hikon, the Krasel Kach Yisrael, and we analyzed the inyan of the Gartol. Then we had mentioned these few lines that Rabbi Barfuna Rami Puzmik Yumatsli, Amar Hikon, the Krasel Kach Yisrael. Right? He wore either some sort of, he put on his shoes, or he at least put on, or he put on nice socks, Rashi says. And he wore something with Chabad on his feet. And davened, and the way we interpret that is that one should not daven barefoot. If that's the minig of your town, that you don't walk around barefoot. Omer hikon the krasel kach yisrael. Rava shadi glimi. He threw off his cloak. Upachar yadei. And pachar yadei seems to mean he clenched his hands one in the other. Umatsli. Omer kav the kamimari. So this seems to be a machlokas. That Rava seems to argue and say, no, ka'avda kamimari, we don't, shouldn't dress up fancy, as if we were a dignitary having an audience with the king. Feel like an eved in front of the king, and therefore we should not wear fancy clothing, and we should clench our hands. Amar vashik zinlu, kahana ki ika tsar biyama shadi glimi pachu yadi matli, amar ka'avda kamimari, ki ika shlama lovich miskasi misatef u matli, amar hikun krasu kach yisrael. Rav Kahana seems to have made a pshara, and he said it depends on the circumstances. Right, if there's trouble in the world, then he was ka'av, then the ikar of his tefillah was a tefillah be'is tzara, and therefore he did not wear his fancy clothing, and he clenched his hands. And if there was shalom in the world, then the ikar of his tefillah was not primarily a tefillah be'is tzara, but just a opportunity of avodas Hashem, and therefore he... And therefore, he would wear fancy clothing, davka, and davka misham hikon the cross elokecha Yisrael. So it's not clear in Rav Kahana whether Rav Kahana was merely a detail of tefillah, meaning tefillah is tefillah. In terms of how you dress for tefillah, well, when you're asking for X, you have to be in the mood for X and dress properly. When you're asking for Y, you have to be in the mood for Y and dress properly. Or whether there was actually a halachic distinction, perhaps. We know, without getting into the Rav's Chiddush on this, that there's a fundamental machlokes in the Rambam, the Ramban, about tefillah. The Rambam says the mitzvah to daven every day, because it says you should be oved Hashem, and avodas Hashem means, at least, in the primary level, tefillah. Ramban disagrees and says, there's no mitzvah to daven every day, daven is the Rambanan. How could that be? What do you mean? Judaism is a religion. There's a religion where later they had a cute idea, but originally religion didn't include praying to God. That doesn't make any sense. So the Ramban says, no, of course midaraisa, you have to daven be'is tzara when you're in trouble. Of course you have to daven when you're in trouble. That's obvious. That's the ABCs of being religious. Otherwise, you don't believe in God. Otherwise, you're an atheist. But to daven every day, stam, even when you don't have a particular need to daven, that is only midrabanan. So there seem to be two models of tefillah here. The Ramban's model is tefillah be'es tzara. Sort of reminiscent of the idea of a tainis, right? The Ram writes in Taniyos, whenever you have a tzara, you have to blow the chatzotzos and daven and fast, etc. So the Ramban has an idea of tefillah of be'es tzara. The Ramban has an idea of tefillah as just avodas Hashem, as part of a relationship, an ongoing relationship with Hashem. The Rav famously said, from his Rav perspective, he said, really, in terms of the existential nature of tefillah, there's no machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban. They both agree their nature of tefillah is be'is tzara, is in times of crisis. Just the Ramban thought you're only in a crisis when you're in a crisis, and the Rambam thought we're always in an existential crisis. Because a person just walks around the world, he has to face his own mortality, he has to face the problems of evil in the world, he has to face questions about the nature and justification of his existence, and therefore, if you're a philosopher, right, that's the difference between a philosopher and a regular person, right? A regular person knows how to be sad and nervous and troubled in a time of trouble, and how to be happy in times of well-being. And a philosopher always has svaras to be unhappy and nervous. So the Rambam was just more of a philosopher, and not to be unhappy, chas v'shalom, but to sense the existential fragility of our life. So that's how the Rav analyzed the machlokes that everyone agrees to feel of Eitz Tzara. they just argued, or you have a Pashup Shat Eis Sara only when there's Taka a war or something, Lo Aleinu, or you always have an existential Eis Sara. But if we assume not like the Rav, that Rav is a very, very fascinating idea, but if we assume not like the Rav, no, they just argue about two different models of tefillah. The Ramban says tefillah is about calling out to Hashem Be'ith Sara, I mean, Mamakim Krasi Hashem. The Rambam says, no, tefillah is about an ongoing relationship with the Borei. Eis Sara, you look in Hilchus Taniyos, not in Hilchus Tefillah. If we assume not like the Rav, then it could be that Rav Kahana was saying they're both right. There are two kiyum of tefillah. There's a regular kiyum of tefillah of just an ongoing relationship with Hashem. There is a different kiyum of tefillah, Be'ith Sara, when you have to call out to Hashem when you are desperate for salvation. And therefore, it could be that Rav Kahana was saying, I can't prove anything. Maybe he was just saying you should be in the right frame of mind wherever you are without a halachic difference. But it could be he was also saying there's a halachic difference. There are two halachas of tefillah. Both the Rambam and the Ramban are right. Therefore, Be'ez Shalom, we just have an ongoing relationship with Hashem. A relationship with Hashem, you dress up. But Be'ez Sara, you have a different kiyum, an additional kiyum, an overriding kiyum of tefillah, Be'ez Sara, like the Ramban. And therefore, you have to approach Hashem as Ka'avda Kami Mari, as someone who is desperately crying out, not as someone who has a who has a secure relationship. Okay, perhaps that's the Amkus of Rav Kahana. In any case, in terms of Psak, it becomes very strange, because the Rabbeinu Kanano quotes Rav Kahana. The simple pshat is we should think Rav Kahana has the last word, right? And not only does Rav Kahana have the last word, the rule of the last word is not such a necessarily such a strong rule in Shas. But Rav Ashi quotes Rav Kahana. Rav Ashi is always Basra, almost always Basra. So we think we should paskin like Rav Kahana. In fact, the Rabbeinu Hananel quotes as the Maskana, Rav Kahana. The Rif and the Rush also quote Rav Kahana. And the Ramah and the Torah paskin like Rav Kahana. Right, certainly for all Ashkenazim in this room. Looks like we might be. So the Ramah and the Torah follow most Rishonim quote Rav Kahana. The Rambam is peculiar here. The Rambam and the Machaber. The Machaber just is the same thing as the Rambam, the Darko Ba Kodesh. The Rambam is a little unclear what his approach is. I can't promise you the right answer, especially since it sort of seems that the right answer is against most of the Mefarshim on the Rambam. So I can't promise you what the right answer is. But the Rambam is peculiar. He says, at least what he seems to say is, how do you do Tikkun HaGuf? You should put Yadav Alibo Kfusin Hayimonis Ala Smolis V'Only Ke'Eved Lifnei Rabo. You should put your hands like this. On your heart, that sounds like Pachar Yadei. And how do we know it sounds like Pachar Yadei? Because he says Ke'eved Kami Rabo. Why would he have doing something funny with your hands Ke'eved Kami Rabo if it wasn't from the Sugya, right? Too much of a coincidence. L'chora. So it seems to be Paskin's Pachar Yadei at all times. Pachar Yadei at all times. And then he says Tikkun al Bushim Ketzad, you should be Matakin your Malbushim at Mitzayin Atzvo and Mahadir. Right? You should wear nice clothing. Sounds like at all times. He is not at all Machalik between a Shalom and a Sara. There are three ways to understand the Rambam, two of them in the Gedolei Olam among the Mefarshim, and one of them that I think is the Pashup Shat in the Rambam. What did Rambam do with our Sugya? So, for an obvious reason that logically you should paskin like Rav Kahana. He is Rav Ashi and you saw he's Basra. The predecessors of the Rambam, the Rif and the Rav, paskin like Rav Kahana. So everyone assumed he paskined like Rav Kahana. How about the fact that he didn't pass like Rav Kahana? So the Kesef Mishnah says that he understood in Rav Kahana that the Pachar Yodeh part was at all times. It happened to mention it in half of Rav Kahana, but really you're supposed to be Pachar Yodeh at all times. The difference between Shalom and Tsar is only in your Levush. And the Rambam thought that was obvious and didn't mention it. So, here you have the Rambam. What do you do with your hands? And what do you do with your Levush? Hands is always Pachar.
which is, this is one Keset Mishnah, which is Dachuk in Rav Kahana, because Rav Kahana sounds like you only do the Pachar Yodei in a time of Tsar. But he says, no. Coincidentally, the Pachar Yodei happened to be in the Tsar side of Rav Kahana, but you always do it. Little Dachuk. And the Lavush is that it's obvious without stating that you downbreed Be'ez Tzara, which is Dachuk in the Rambam. Right? Which is obviously Dachuk in the Rambam. That the Rambam said wear nice clothing, but he obviously meant Be'ez Tzara, you should wear bad clothing. Okay. A little bit of a Tzara'iyun. The Bach has even a bigger Tzara'iyun. Well, I don't know. The Bach also says two Dachaks. It's just a question of which two Dachaks you pick. The Bach says that when the Rambam says, what does the Rambam say? Yodov alibo kfusim, that's not pachar yodi. Pachar yodi means what Rashi says, you squeeze them. Just putting them on top of one another is not pachar yodi. That's normal. Pachar yodi means to squeeze them. Okay, say pachar yodi means to squeeze them, and you don't squeeze them too hard and lose your circulation. That's not so crazy. But the Rambam, first what he says is that, that yada alibo kifusin is not pachar yadi, which is dachuk in the Rambam, right? Because it coincidentally says something about your hands, and that's for a shovel. And that's why you always do it. Why you always do yada valibo kfusin? Because that's not pachar yadi. That's a different idea that he had from a different source that has nothing to do with the Gemara of Eved Lifnei Rabo. That's the lashon he uses. Okay, a little dachuk in the Rambam. And he says it's obvious without stating that you downgrade your clothes and pachar yadi in an Eis Tzara, which is also obviously Dachuk in the Rambam. In general, you've seen my prejudice so far this year that I'm never so attracted to Pshat in the Rambam that say he meant a lot of things that he didn't write in the Mishnah Torah. Because the Rambam seems to have felt that he should write things clearly in the Mishnah Torah. At least on a basic level, like there's a basic din, and he just didn't bother me. It was obvious that Eis Tzara, you have to downgrade your clothes and do Pachar Yadi. That he doesn't have to say. You know? Why is it obvious? Because it's obvious. Hakol fi Yatzara, the Bach says. Whatever the Tzara is, you act the way someone acts when they're Bitzara. Everyone knows how to do that without the Rambam telling you. Alright. I think the Pashup Shan of the Rambam is just that he holds always Pachar Yadi and always wear. What kind of nice clothes did he give it as an example? He says, you shouldn't be barefoot. That's the only example he uses. Always wear nice clothes such as shoes. Puzmaki, right? Let's even put in the word farsuja. Puzmaki. Oh, what happened to Rav Kahana? So I just want to say two things to Rav Kahana in the Rambam, which I think is is less dogbook. Okay. Whatever we want to say, that the Rambam understood that we don't hold like Rav Kahana. The Rambam understood we don't hold like Rav Kahana because the Rambam understood that most Amorim were against Rav Kahana. He says, look, Rav Bar Huna was Rami Puzmukim Matzli and Hikon, said you have to wear nice clothing all the time. Rav Kahana only said Hikon Be'ei Shalom. He understood that Rabbi Rav Huna always said Hikon, and Rava always threw off his glima and was pachar yadei all the time, right? So he understood that the Rav Amoraim were against Rav Kahana, that most Amoraim, and the truth is a little funny, Rav, you know, maybe Rav is a boss for Rav Kahana, not so pashut. So I think what the Rambam understood is that we paskin like Rava and who else? And Rava by Rav Huna. Rava by Rav Huna against Rav Kahana. And let me say it a little sharper. How do you read our sugya? Maybe the folks in the Rambam and everyone else is how to read our sugya. Everyone else reads our sugya as, Rava did all the fancy things. And, no, Rava did all the non-fancy things, the Eved things. And Rav Barav Amnuna did all the fancy things. Ah, what's the kasar shlish l'achriya b'neihem? The answer is they're both right. It depends on time. Rav Kahana is like the maskana of everyone, right? So that's what the Rif and the Rach, all mostly Echronim, the Rambam understood. Rav Kahana is the maskana of everyone. I think it's pasha to me that the Rambam understood the sugya differently. Rav Kahana is not the maskana of everyone. It's a machlokes. What's the machlokes? But it's not a three-way machlokes. Fancy, Eved, or it depends. It's a two-way machlokes. That's how I think the Rambam understood the Gemara. The Lamia Saiti, this is the only part that I can't say I'm 100% sure, but the Rambam said it's a two-way machlokes. There's no steer between Hikon and Eved. How do I know there's no steer between Hikon and Eved? Because the Rambam says, in the same two halachas next to each other, you should be metakim al blushov and metzayin etzma umahadir, and says, you should be ke'eved lefnei rabo. What does that mean? You could be Hikon and Ke'eved Bnei Rabo. There was no machlokes in Rav and Rav Hamnuna that Rav Kahana came to make up Shara for. No. Rav and Rav Hamnuna said you can have both at the same time. Rav Kahana said you can't have both at the same time. You have to pick one or the other. So I think that, in terms of reading the Gemara, the way, right, Shari Shonim and many Mefarshe HaRambam read the Gemara, is that Rava versus Rava of Eved versus Rava Bar Rav Huna of Hikon, and the Maskana is a Pshara Rav Kahana. So yeah, we'll pass like Maskana the Pshara Rav Kahana. But Lanias Daiti, the Rambam read it differently. I think the Rambam read it differently. No, Rava and Rava bar Rav Huna say Hikon plus Eved together, simultaneously. After all, why can't you have Avdus in your Amida b'fnei Hashem and have Hidr in your Amida b'fnei Hashem? You're like, you're standing in front of Hashem like Eved b'fnei Rabo, but like an Eved who has to be fancy the Fnei Rabo for the covenant of the Rabo. Meaning, at the same time, Tefillah is an experience of a lack of Chashivas, Eved the Fnei Rabo, and of Chashivas, and you have an audience with the Melech Vachay Alachim. Why can't you have both experiences at the same time? I think that's the Chaf of the Rambam. Yeah, you can have, davening is complex. You have Avdos and Hidr at the same time, which is true. When we stand in front of Hashem, it's a tremendous Chashivas that we have an audience with the Melech Vachay Alachim Kadosh Baruch Hu, and it's a tremendous Shiflos. That, you know, when I stand in front of the, you know, the guy, the taxi driver, so maybe I feel good about myself. I say, you know what, I learned more hours a day than him. When I stand in front of the, third grader, I say, I'm a lot smarter than him. I learned a lot more than he did. When I stand in front of the Hashem, it's a tremendous feeling of Eved Kamei Rabo, like, I'm nothing and I have no right to any existence. Maybe to have both of them at the same time, versus Rav Kahana, who says you have to pick one or the other. And Niralini is Daiti, and here there's only one thing I'm going to go out on a limb. Niralini is Daiti, the other Rishonim, the Akronim, said, well, there's Eved versus Hikun and a Pshara. We pass it like the Pshara. The Maskana is obviously a Pshara. The Rambam says, no, it's you can do both at the same time, versus you have to pick one or the other, and then you have to decide what mood you're in. We pass it. You can do both at the same time. What I'm claiming then is that there's no machloksim, Rav and Rav Hamnuna. What did Rav Bar Rav Huna? Rav Bar Rav Huna says you have to wear gartel and shoes. Right? The Rambam would agree, gartel and shoes. He doesn't mention gartel for reasons we discussed. What did Rava say? Clench your hands and throw off a glima. What's a glima? A glima is a very fancy cloak. Okay? Who said you have to wear a very fancy cloak? Maybe that's gaiva to wear a glima. You don't have to wear the fanciest, schmanciest clothes that are big day gaiva. You just have to wear a big day, begadim mechubadim. Well, it's the Rambam's getter. The Rambam's getter here is, don't be barefoot if you want to stand in front of an important person barefoot. You have to dress like you're standing in front of an important person. You don't have to dress like you are an important person. You don't have to dress like a rebbe. You have to dress like you have to dress like you're a chassid going to meet the rebbe. You don't have to dress like the rebbe. No, when you stand in front of Hashem, no one's the rebbe. Even the rebbe's not the rebbe. Right? I don't care who you are. I don't care if I'm going to meet the Vilna Gaon, I would dress mechubad. But when the Vilna Gaon stands in front of Hashem, he's smaller than me in front of the Vilna Gaon. Relatively. Right? So, you don't dress like a rebbe in front of Hashem. Lanius daiti. Now, the Rambam never says, throw off your glima. That's the one thing which I am speculating. But it could be, maybe, and always, don't wear big day, I wouldn't say big day gaiva, but the begadim of like a glima that rulers wear, big day, that leaders wear. What?
Gedula?
Big day gedula, good. Wear like you're standing in front of gedolim, not like you are a gadol. In which case, there's no machlokas. He could, and every simultaneously, ke'omeid bifnei gedolim, lo ke'gedolim. That part I can't promise you, because you can come to me and say, there's a third option. The Rambam held it with a three-way machlokas. No, but then he's passing like both sides. No, I like this shot. Okay. Anyway, that's Lanius Daiti, I think, might be shot on the Rambam. He fundamentally argued on everyone else understood there was not a steer between Eved and Hikun Lekrasa Lekrasa Mishal, between Eved and Hidr. And that might be why he doesn't pass like Rav Kana. I realize I'm against everyone here, but it's hard for me to accept a shot on the Rambam. The Rambam says X. Says, but it was obvious he meant it depends on the circumstances and sometimes why. If the Rambam says X, you should mean X. If the Rambam says you should go like this with your hands, you should always go like this with your hands. If the Rambam says you should wear nice clothing, you should always wear nice clothing. Ah, how can you always be Pachar Yadeh and always have nice clothing? Because the Rambam didn't mean Pachar Yadeh. The answer is, you should always be Pachar Yadeh, always have nice clothing, because Hikon and Eved, Eved Kami Rabba, were never arguing with each other. They were agreeing. It's only Rav Kahana who thought that you had to choose sides instead of having a complex experience.
I also
admit it was a complex experience.
By attitude, I mean, clearly when there was a king and he had an Eved come in, the Eved would always dress very properly, but was he acting subservient? The dressing clothes by itself doesn't do anything. It's the acting. Are you subservient or not subservient while you're wearing those clothes in front of the king? So the haka over here, you can...
You can be Pachar Yadeh and wear nice clothes. Right, the Eved wears nice clothes to honor the king, not to honor himself.
But he still has to have this subservience,
right,
to Pachar Yadeh.
Right, and that's okay. Okay, that's as far as this part of the Gemara goes, and everyone can form their own opinion if they want as to what they think the Rambam holds. Continuing in the Gemara has a very interesting discussion. Rava Chazir Hanun Kamar Fitzlosi. Right? Apparently, Rava, this is the Hasidim of Snagdim, go at least, 1,500 years before, or 1,400 years, rather, before we know of this machlokas in history. Rava, sort of, Amnunu's Marif B'Tzlosei, Amr, Menich Chai Olam, Oskim Chai Shah. He says, why are you davening so long instead of learning Torah? You're abandoning the Chai Olam of the Torah, and you're Oskim Chai Shah of davening. But who suffers my tefiluchud, my Torah luchud? Rav Nuna also had a svara. He goes, no, there's a time for Torah and a time for tefillah. Meaning, what's interesting, he didn't necessarily argue that Torah might be on some sort of higher level, right? He didn't say, no, I don't think Torah is Chai Olam. He says, even whatever Torah and tefillah are, there's this man for each one of them, right? The Torah is for Torah, tefillah is for tefillah, and you need to allot the proper amount of time for each one, and if that means that you are in a place spiritually where you have to daven long, then that's not bittul Torah, because that's the avodah for you at this particular juncture. So this is a very, very fundamental machlokas. It has not had a clear hakra. There are still yeshivas nowadays where if a guy davens long, they yell at him for bittul Torah. There are many places nowadays where they encourage davening long and consider Zman Torah L'chud and Zman Tefillah L'chud. Okay, just in terms of analyzing what they mean here, we're going to save the Iker discussion for the relationship with Torah and Tefillah for Dafyud Aleph and Aleph, for the Chavir Ma'us of the Torah. But one of the interesting questions is, what does it mean, Chai Olam Chai Shah? Right? This is something that bothered some of the Mefarshim. Torah being called Chai Olam didn't bother anyone. Okay, if you're Jewish, then you know the Torah is Chai Olam. But why is davening Chai Shah? Isn't davening Ruchnias? If you tell me, why are you, making money, I can say, oh, that's Chai Shah. Why are you doing Gashmias? That's Chai Shah. Davening is davening to Hashem. Isn't that also Ruchnias? So what makes davening Chai Shah if it's a mitzvah? So Rashi says here, interestingly, Chai Olam Torah, Tefillah Tzor Chai Shah, L'Ruful L'Shom Muzonos. In Torah, you're interested in learning the eternal things. In Tefillah, you're interested in asking Hashem for things that you need in this world, like Parnasa and Refuah, etc. Meaning, the point of Tefillah is to ask Hashem for things that you need in Gashmias. Therefore, Tefillah is to achieve Gashmias. Tefillah is to, use Ruchnias to achieve Gashmias. Right? You want to talk to Hashem, so that he'll give you things in Gashmias. That's Chaisha. Torah is to use Ruchnias to get Ruchnias. So that is Chaye Olam. Based on this Rashi, we'll see a modification in a moment. That seems to be somewhat of a downgraded idea of tefillah. Really? Tefillah is not communion with the Borei. Tefillah is not for religious experience. Tefillah is not for Omei Lufei HaMelech. Tefillah is just to get things. Okay, that's what Rashi seems to say here. So why is tefillah called Chai Shah? Rashi says, Mispalel le refua shalom umizonos. Rav Kook in the Einaya said no. Davening and Talmud Torah are both ruchnias. He's not saying davening is just to nudge Hashem, to ask him for things? No, that's part of davening. That's the outer klipa of davening. But davening is about communing with Hashem. Says davening and Talmud Torah are actually about very similar things. They're about coming close to Hashem. Are about having an understanding and a relationship and a conversation between you and Hashem. But he says, what's the ultimate difference? He says, Torah is, I don't come from where I'm coming from, right? I take the Torah from where it's coming from, and I learn it. So Torah is taking the eternal truth of the Dvar Hashem and trying to bring it into myself. What is davening? Davening is also for ruchnias. But what kind of ruchnias? I'm taking where I'm holding now, and whatever my concerns and whatever my feelings are now, and using those to bring me closer to Hashem. And using those to connect me to Hashem through whatever I'm feeling right now. And therefore, Cook says, they're both ruchnias. But Torah is a deeper kind of ruchnias because it's Chai Olam. It's taking the eternal truths of Hashem and bring them into me. As well, Tefillah is taking Chai Shah. Whatever in the Shah now I am holding, I am using that to connect me to Hashem. Okay, but that's Chai Shah because I'm only connected to Hashem through the ephemeral situation of my life now. When I learn Torah, I'm connected to Hashem through the eternal Dvar Hashem that is true for all situations in life in every world. So that's how Rav Kook understood Chai Shah, not as Gashmias, but that it's also Ruchnias, but it's coming to Hashem from my subjective place, not from the object of Dvar Hashem. I think that's what Rav Kook meant. They're just two different ways of approaching Hashem. You can take Hashem and try to understand it. That's Torah. Or you can take who you are and bring Hashem into whatever is going on in your life. And that's Tefillah. And he says, that's why he says it's a very difficult machlokas lachria. Very difficult machlokas lachria. He says, on the one hand,
On the one hand, no, isn't like the objective eternity of Hashem more important than just what you happen to be feeling now? But on the other hand, Rabbi Nuna says, no, because if you want to connect to Hashem, you have to connect to Hashem from where you are, right? Otherwise, you are not connecting to Hashem. So it's machlokas in what's the best way to connect to Hashem. To take the most objective Dvar Hashem and mold yourself to it, or to say, no, then it won't stick, to take where you are and bring Hashem into there. It could very well be that one could say that, yeah, maybe that's what Rashi meant also. After all, whatever Rabbi Nuna mean according to Rashi. If Rabbi Nuna means it's more important to have more money than to learn Torah, so I should daven longer, it could be that he also might like Rav Kook. Yes, I'm asking for Gashmias, but I'm asking for Gashmias as a way of connecting to Hashem through the Gashmias that I'm concerned about now, and it's more important to connect to Hashem through being really myself, even if I'm concerned about his money, than to connect to Hashem through something that's not where I'm holding, and then I won't really connect. Okay, I did see when I was flipping through the Ein Yaakov, the very small print on the side, that there was a Ahavas, a son, which is one of the people all the way inside of the traditional Ein Yaakovs, who get so little space that they only talk like every 12 pages, and then it continues for 12 pages, and by the time you finish reading the part on Daf Beis, the Ein Yaakov's up to Daf Samach. But he wants to say a very technical sense, that it wasn't talking about the experience and motivation, it was just talking about the power. That Torah protects you in Olam Haba. Now it's a little funny. All mitzvahs give you reward in Olam Haba. So you can't say, well, Torah only rewards you in Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, but Tefillah only rewards you in Olam Hazeh. No. All mitzvahs reward you in Olam Haba. But he says, Torah has a mugging, protects you in Olam Haba, but tefillah and mitzvahs only protect you in Olam Hazeh. So he says, why are you doing something with a lower schar when you could do something with a higher schar? But he wasn't necessarily insulting tefillah, saying tefillah is not about something eternal. Of course tefillah is about something eternal. Just, it's not as good of a schar as Torah. So that's the shot of the Ahavas Eisan. He makes it a very technical distinction. He says, Torah is magen alav afilu ba'olam haba, and tfila protects you only in olam hazeh. Okay. That could be also. Now, how to take this Rashi is going to affect an issue that many people were bothered by, such as the Sfas Emes here. Sfas Emes asks a very classic question. He says, hold on a second. It's machlokas. Rava holds you should always daven short and learn more. Apparently that's what Rav Chaim did. Right, Rav Chaim daven quickly and learn more. Right? They say, someone once went over to Rav Chaim, says, how come you daven so fast? The Ra writes that you should savor every word of Shona Esrei as if you were counting gold coins. Like every word of Shona Esrei is a gold coin. So how come you daven so fast? So Rav Chaim answered, gold coins, I would go through much faster than that. Okay. He held like Rava. And Rav Luna says, no. You should daven as long as you can, as long as you're inspired to. So, if this Sfas Emes has an interesting question. What does it say in brachas about the Hasidim or Rishonim? They would be Shoah-Shah, Mesfal-Shah, and Shoah-Shah three times a day, right? They would prepare for an hour, daven for an hour, and then decompress for another hour. Three times a day is 9 hours. So they ask, well, how did they work, and how did they learn Torah? It says, because they were such chassidim, Hashem gave them a bracha, and even though they had hardly any time to work, they made enough money, and even though they had hardly any time to learn, they remembered everything so well that they still knew as much as guys who learned all day. So the Sfas Emes says, hold on a second, how can Rava argue on the chassidim Rishonim? Chassidim Rishonim are from a long time ago, right? So Rav Nuna is saying, I'm like chassidim Rishonim. I don't daven 9 hours a day, I'm there in the Madrega. If I was on the Madrega, I'd daven 9 hours a day. I'll daven, just longer than all the other Amoraim. But how can Rava deny the chassidim Rishonim? So, I don't know, maybe the answer is he just did disagree with chassidim Rishonim. I'm not sure what to answer that question. Like, I mean, other than what I found in the Mefarshim. Does Rava disagree with the chassidim Rishonim? Who obviously thought that Zman Torah Luchud is Zman Tefillah Luchud, even to the point where Zman Tefillah almost crowded out Torah.
The
that maybe that he held that they were in such a madriga they could take the 3 hours and put it in tefillah and do something useful. Later generations were not on that level to put 3 hours into tefillah would be wasting time. That you
okay, so that's power. Similar to what the Sfas Emes says, right? If you ask the stira between Rava and the Hasidim Harishonim, if you ask the stira between Rava and Hasidim Harishonim, so the Sfas Emes answers based on Rashi. He says no. Rava wasn't arguing against someone who davens as a way of communing with the Borei and really accomplishes tremendous spiritual things. No one would object to that. Rava was only arguing because he saw that Rav Hamnuna was just davening because he needed money, or because, you know, he had a headache, or because his cow was sick, and, you know, whatever the case may be. He says he could tell that Rav Hamnuna wasn't like Hasidim Rishonim. Rav Hamnuna wasn't, you know, the Amshin of her Rebbe. No, Rav Hamnuna was usually davening the same as everyone else, and he knew Rav Hamnuna's cow was sick. I'm adding the example, not the Sfas Emes. And all of a sudden, he davens an extra hour for a sick cow. Says, that's Chayisha. You're not davening to commune with the Borei. You're davening for your sick cow. And Rav Hamnuna answered with help, no. Even though I'm davening with my sick cow, that's an important part of religious experience, that whatever you're holding in, you bring to Hashem. So the Sfas Emes says that Rava agrees that tefila l'shem, let's use the brisker term, amidim v'nei melech, right? L'shem ruchnius. You can lengthen. But Rav Hamnuna was only davening hard for Gashmius. And he gets that from Rashi. Look, Rashi says tefillah is only Chayisha. You think Rashi means tefillah is just Chayisha? Tefillah is just Gashmius? The answer is, in Rav Hamnuna's case, it happened to be that he wasn't such a good davener and all of a sudden just wanted to daven because his cow was sick or because, you know, he didn't have money to pay off his gemach loans or whatever the case may be. But if you Hasidim or Shodim or davening for avoda, then no one would object. Okay, that's Alpi Rashi. And then the Gemara says, Rav Hamnuna held no. Even if you're only davening for Gashmius and normally you don't daven so well, still that's an opportunity to bring yourself closer to Hashem and take advantage of the Gashmius opportunity to daven, and you should. Very fascinating philosophical machlokos here. The Me'iri, though, seems to say things a little differently. The Me'iri says, he mainly gets it from the next sugya, but he says in this sugya also, he says that the difference between Rav Hamnuna and the Hasidim Rishonim is that the Hasidim Rishonim didn't have Seder then. Rav Hamnuna was missing Seder. He says, whatever his Talmud is Aruch Lefanav, meaning when it's time for Torah, right, the Hasidim Rishonim, that was their schedule. They had their Seder time, they had their davening time, so they did everything at the right time. Rav Hamnuna was stealing from the sheer time in order to daven. And that's what Rava said. Rava says, I don't object to someone who davens if that's their davening time, but you shouldn't steal Torah time to daven long. And Rav Hamnuna said back, no, you should even steal Torah time to daven long if that's the mood you're inspired to, because Zman Torah, this man is not necessarily whatever you thought it would be yesterday. You have to go by what you're inspired to, what experience you have then. So he also says that Rava doesn't object to long davening unless it's an arranged time to learn. Talmudo Aruch Lefanav. He says he has no problem with everyone having their own derech and Hashem, and some people daven longer and shorter. He just says, once you have the pattern, if you're in yeshiva and they have starim, you shouldn't daven and stop for 3 hours and miss the Seder. If you want to go to a different yeshiva and daven 3 hours, fine. But
you shouldn't mess up your seder of the learning when you've already set aside that time for learning. I guess the only other option is that he just objected to the Hasidim Rishonim, that he would disapprove Hasidim Rishonim. It's a little funny because Hasidim Rishonim is a brisa, and so I don't know. I don't know what the other. I mean, if you hold no, he just held no one should ever daven long in any circumstances. Then he seems to be talking against the Hasidim Rishonim, unless he just said that the Hasidim Rishonim are different because since they had a special bracha in their learning, so they didn't have any Bittul Torah. But we who don't have that special bracha would have Bittul Torah. So maybe that would be the third answer. The third answer is Ula Yishlomar Rava Asar Tfila Aruka B'chol Gavni. No, Rava really said you're never allowed to daven long because of Bittul Torah. I mean, if you're someone who would otherwise be learning, right? V'shani Chasidim Harishonim She HaTorah Nitvalahem Benis. Okay, they had a nace, so it wasn't Bittul Torah, because when they daven, and Hashem gave them the amount of Torah they were learning that time. I know that's against the Gra, that you have to work for Torah, but Seder, you're allowed to be against the Gra. So, if you want to read Rava very, very radically, he's against anyone ever davening long if they could be learning. But many of the Farshim say no. He's only against what Rashi says, people davening long for Gashmias. But he's not against people davening long as part of Ruchnias, or he's only against davening long if it's time to learn. If it's time to daven, then he's no problem with davening long.
Philosophically, that's a big problem. What one is saying then is that the Torah is limited, and if I've done up to the limit, then I can just do a little bit left. If it's unlimited, there's no limit to what I can do.
No, but if you say the 9 hours they spend davening, Hashem gave them 9 hours worth of Torah memory, then they haven't lost anything. But you're right, it's a speculation. Okay, a very fascinating discussion. Continuing in this, you have another story, which seems to be somewhat similar. Rav Yirmi, he also coming to Rav Zeira, asking Shmaitza. Rav Yirmi was learning in front of Rav Zeira. Naga Litzluye, it was time to daven. I become a sorry Rav Yirmi. And Rav Yirmi was like getting up and trying to stop the shiur to daven. Currently, Rav Zeira makes her asno mishma Torah, gamsu galasso toeva. Rav Zeira criticizes and says, if you take away your ear from hearing Torah, then your tefillah is also an abomination. Sounds like it's similar to the machlokas Rava and Rav Hamnuna. So it could be that this is the same as the machlokas Rava and Rav Hamnuna. The Tosfos actually, which we're going to come back to maybe on Dr. Aleph. It sounds like the same machlokas Rava and Rav Hamnuna, but some of the mafarshim, such as the Iyun Yaakov, the Ein Yaakov, say no. If you assume not like the Meiri, Rav and Rav Hamnuna were arguing about if you're not in the middle of Shir. Rav Zeira and Yirmiyah both agree with Rav Hamnuna on Zman Tefillah L'Chud, but Rav Zeira thought that Zman Tefillah L'Chud, Rav Yirmiyah thought Zman Tefillah L'Chud even in the middle of Shir. Rav Zeira says Zman Tefillah L'Chud, if you're davening, you can go long, but you shouldn't stop Shir to daven. So it could be that they both either Rav Hamnuna is Rav Yirmiyah and Rava is Rav Zeira, or this is what the Iyun Yaakov says. No, they're both in Rav Hamnuna.
No, you can daven long. Rav Yirmiyah thought because you can daven long, you can also shorten shiur to daven. Zeira says no. If you're already davening, you can daven long, but you shouldn't cut off the shiur in order to daven. No, then wait and daven later.
There's a big, interesting discussion. There's a technical discussion, a philosophical discussion, but there's an interesting discussion here in the Mefarshim as to why it says Gam Tfilaso to Eva. Tainach, he thinks it's wrong. It's Bittul Torah. But I understand. Let's say I do Bittul Torah. I do Bittul Torah to go and do another mitzvah. That really maybe someone else could have done, I didn't have to do now. And so I do Bittul Torah to go build a sukkah. So maybe it was wrong. I should have let my brother build the sukkah. But it's still a sukkah, right? Meaning the sukkah is not a to'eva. Like, why is the tefillah to'eva? Even if he did the wrong thing in Bittul Torah, why is the tefillah to'eva? And here we have an interesting machlokas in the Mefarshim, the Iyun Yaakov. The Iyun Yaakov says the tefillah is a to'eva because Bittul Torah
ruins your mitzvos. Anyone who does bittul Torah, it ruins their mitzvos, and it's a cloud. The bittul Torah turns your mitzvos into a to'eva and makes your mitzvos not ritzuyim to Hashem. You lose your star of your mitzvos if you do bittul Torah.
Like
it's a big finish.
Isn't the opposite of, if you learn and don't do the mitzvos, then meaning you're learning...
No, it's the complement. If you learn and don't do mitzvos, you get scarred for mitzvos. If you don't learn and do mitzvos, you don't get scarred for mitzvos. Okay, we're just big intellectuals. That's the Ion Yaakov. The Ion Yaakov says, Ba'onish bittul Torah, the mitzvos become to'eva. Rav Kook says, no, it's a more philosophical machlokas here. It's a more philosophical machlokas. And he says that what's the difference between Torah and tefillah? Torah is about the intellect, right? Tefillah is about the regesh, is about the emotions. So, what was the machlokas? Rav Kook says, Rav Yirmiya said, okay, we have to stop our intellectual learning. I have to prepare myself emotionally to daven. Like, I need to put the intellect on the side in order to go with my emotions. And Rav Zera said back to him, no. If you put your intellect on the side and go with your emotions, that's a very dangerous thing. That could be a to'eva. Unbridled emotions could lead you to all kinds of places. You never know where you'll end up. We don't believe that one should follow their emotions unbridled, and one has to put the intellect aside in order to properly express their emotions. Rather, what we believe is that davka, the intellect, gives guidance to the emotions, and that davka, the more Torah you learn, the better you'll daven, because you'll have a better intellectual understanding of what the world and what Hashem is all about, and then that will help you funnel and guide your emotions in the right direction. So he said this is a very fundamental machlokas. It was two versions of davening. Rav Yirmiya thought the best davening is to put the intellect aside and go with your emotions. And Rav Zera says, no, that's a to'eva. You can end up in all kinds of crazy places if you do that. You can end up doing the opposite of Ritzon Hashem. The only way to make sure that you're doing Ritzon Hashem is to have the intellect guide and channel the emotions, and therefore, adarabah. The more Torah you learn, the better you'll daven. So don't stop learning in order to daven. Learn more, and then you'll daven better. So that's why he says, "Gam tefillah to'eva," because it actually detracts from your tefillah if you think that tefillah is the opposite. It has to be mufka from your intellectual understanding.
You can make an argument that's what Purim is about, the intellect aside.
That Purim is Reveria. One could certainly make an argument like that. But Rav Zera could answer back that if you make Purim 365 days a year, that's a to'eva. I think I have no problem going out on a limb and saying whoever treats all your everyday like Purim is a to'eva. I'm sure I'm not insulting anyone not in this room, but I have no problem, you can quote me, whoever thinks every day is Purim is a to'eva. Just because something is right one day a year, right, doesn't mean that it should become a pattern. Okay, so that is a good inyan d'yoma. Okay, so here we have another fascinating machlokes as to what's the problem of to'eva. Both technically, is it because he just thought learning was more important than davening? Or because, no, they're both important, but you shouldn't stop one thing for the other. And philosophically, is the problem to'eva just because you did the wrong decision, then you get an onesh, and because of your bittul Torah, you know, Hashem doesn't accept your mitzvos? Or no, more philosophically, when you separate the emotions from the intellect, the emotions become to'eva. When you channel the emotions with the intellect, then they become holy. And that's how Rav Kook understood this. Even though Rav Kook was a chassid, he was a litvish chassid, and he understood that the only way for emotions to be holy is to be channeled by the intellect. Continuing the Gemara, they get back to a technical point. When is the Ascholas Din that you don't have to be mafsik? So if you have Yonah Chanam or Shiyas Afu Dayanim, when you put on your judicial robes, Chanam or Mishay Yiftichu, they didn't have judicial robes in those days, you just, Ramaate, you put on the kerchief. Chanam Mishay Yiftichu Valadin, and when the litigants start with their titus, well, plea, Hada Asu Yosu Bedin, Hada Lo Asu Asi Bedin, and it's not a machlokis, if you're already in the middle of cases, you're already wearing your robes. So then, Haskalah is when the litigants start talking. If this is your first case of the session, then, even before they start talking, when you put on your robes, that is a haskalah. Rav Amir Vasev and Yosef Garsi Beni Amude. They were learning between the pillars that supported the base medrash. Chol Shaitu Shaitu Yatovke Ivrid Dasha. And every hour, every once in a while, they would, we say nowadays, on the bolt of the gate. Of Amri, Iika Disleidino Leo Velese, whoever has a Din Torah should come and bring it, and we will judge it. So they would clap, and when they were learning, they would clap. Whoever wants to be judged should come for a Din Torah. Tosos makes an interesting diuk here. Tosos makes an interesting diuk here. Says Tosos, Mashbid the Adiv Din Mi Talmud Torah. What does this sound like? Din is better than Talmud Torah, because they would be stopped their learning. I mean, were they at least offered to stop their learning and judge Din Torah. Right? So if you have a choice, you can sit as a dying in a Din Torah, or you can sit in the base medrash and learn. Better to do a Din Torah than to learn. Din is a very, very, very crucially important thing. And then Tosa says Akasha, and he answers Kasha, okay, they have to run and get into all kinds of details, but they don't argue on the basic yesod, that Din seems to be even more important than Torah. This would be supported in the continuation of the Gemara as well. what does it say? That we have Rav Chis and Rav Huna, Rav Yosbi Bedina Kula Yoma. We're judging all day. Havakachalishli Bayu. So it's a big machlokas, what cholishli bayhu means, what are Rashi's two pshatim? Either they were hungry, because they didn't eat, have time to eat all day because they were busy with the Din Torah, or they were upset, meaning it's cholishli bayhu means their physical lave or their mental lave, they were upset because they didn't get to learn Torah all day. So either way, the Gemara then answers, the maskana, totally Rav Chiya bar Rabbi Difti taught them this brisa. By Yamin al Moshe ben Abokar da'arif, chisal al daitcha shemoshe Yosef don kol yom kulo. Could it really literally mean that Moshe was donning the people all day long? Torosam asenasis. Then when did he learn and teach the Torah? Ella and some of the echorim point out this is the machras. It's the day after Yom Kippur, and we know in the day after Yom Kippur, the Medrash says that he taught them all the halachas of building the Mishkan, and that obviously took many hours. So it's like machrach that he taught a lot of Torah that day and didn't just judge the people. Ella lomerlach, rather it means called dain shadun din emes lamito afil sha'achas. Whoever judges the truth of the truth, even for an hour, he's considered as if he was a shutaf of Hashem and Ma'aseh Bereishis, because here it says Boker and Arif, and there it says Erev and Boker. So therefore, it's a hekesh to Ma'aseh Bereishis. You're like your Hashem's partner in creating the world. So this is also the tremendous chashivus of Din. What actually was the answer? So Rashi's two pshatim, according to which is the first pshat? The first pshat is that they were upset, right? If they were upset because of the Bittul Torah, and the answer is don't be upset because of the Bittul Torah, you have schar of Ma'aseh Bereishis. This is bigger than Torah, than Talmud Torah. If they were hungry because they couldn't eat, then the answer was not a philosophical answer, but a practical answer. You don't have to judge all day. You only have to judge for 1 hour. Even if you judge for 1 hour, that's chashiv. So from now on, don't judge all day. Just judge in the morning and then break for lunch like a normal person. The two pshatim basically depend on whether it's connected to the previous line of the Gemara or the next line of the Gemara. The previous line of the Gemara is that Din is more chashiv than Torah, right? They would interrupt their learning and clap and say, come in and we'll judge you. So then that would support Rashi's first pshat. They were upset because they didn't learn. And he told them, no, don't worry, Din is more important. It's like Shut of Mice of Rishis. But the next line of the Gemara says, Admasa Yoshman Bidin, how long do judges have to sit? Amar Sheshas Mansuda, until lunchtime. So, and then they go on. So if the next line of the Gemara says they have to sit until lunchtime, so Rashi's second shot, which is that they were hungry, and he told them, you don't have to judge all day, you only have to judge until lunchtime, connects to the second, to the next line of the Gemara. So basically the machlokas is this a continuation of the previous line of the Gemara, or is this connected to the next line of the Gemara? And both of them have a source in the sugya. The Ran has something in between the two pshatim of Rashi. He says their concern was that they didn't learn Torah, like the first pshat, but the answer of Chiyuv Rabbi Difti was like the second pshat, says, you don't have to judge all day, just judge in the morning, and then after lunch you can learn Torah. Okay, so they're really three pshat in the sugya. Rashi's first pshat, their problem was that they didn't learn Torah, and the answer was, it's okay, Din is more important. the Ron's shot, their problem was they didn't learn Torah, and the answer was, so just judge in the morning, learn in the afternoon. Third shot is Rashi's Maskana. Rashi's second, that they were hungry, and the answer was, don't fast, just judge in the morning, and then break for lunch. In terms of the Hashivas of Din, it's interesting, there are different shatim in the Rishonim. Why is Din so chashiv? We see two things that are chashiv at Din. Rav Ami and Rav Asi interrupted their learning, which may or may not be the theme of the next story. And it's Shutav LaKadosh Baruch Hu Ma'aseh Bereishis. Why is Din so important? So I've seen three shatim in the Mefarshim here. What does the Meiri say? Why is Din so important? What does Mori say? Why is Din so important?
Because that's Seder Olam.
Exactly, that's what he says, and that's the Torah's Hakdom L'Choshe Mishpat. He quotes our Gemara, Hakdom L'Choshe Mishpat. But he says, Al Shol Zvarim Ha'olam Omeid, Al Din Ve'al Emes Al Shalom, and ultimately you get Emes from the Din, you get Shalom from the Din, so it's really on one thing the world stands, a Din. He says, the Melech B'Mishpat Yamed Aretz, right? Without Din, where, what did Hobbes memorably say? Life would be? Nasty, brutish, and short. Right. Nasty, brutish, and short. Okay, very different than Rousseau's idea of a state of nature, but not for now. But the Torah and the Meiri are saying Hobbes is right and Rousseau is wrong, right? That's Pashup Shot. Pashup Shot is that the Torah tells us. Pashup Shot is that even if the Torah didn't tell us, we'd figure it out. But Pashup Shot is that the Torah tells us Hobbes is right and Rousseau is wrong, right? Rousseau thinks without society, without Din, without anything, we'd all be in Gan Eden, we'd all be in Shangri-La, and everything would be wonderful. It's just because we started with governments and Din and everything, then with politics, once you bring in politics, then it messes up people. We're all innocent until we start with politics. Hobbes says, Adraba, you leave people on their own and they're beasts of prey in the jungle. You need politics and Din in order to make Seder, you know, Mali Mara, Yisrael, Chaim below, it says in Avos. So, okay. Hobbes was a lot firmer than Rousseau. I think we agree with Hobbes. Right? Without Din, we'd all be chayos ros. Din is what's ma'amid the world, what caused the world to exist. And that's meduyik and ma'aseh bereishis, right? Why is Din so important? Because Din is ma'amid the whole world, otherwise society would fall apart and everyone would kill each other and that would be the end of the whole experiment. And therefore, you shoot the LaKadosh Baruch Hu ma'aseh bereishis, because Hashem created the world. But the world would fall apart without Din, so we keep it going. We're shoved up in my separatius. That's the Meiri and that's the Torah. I saw in one of the Mefarshim in Yaakov, the giver at Kosev, meaning the in Yaakov, the Baal in Yaakov himself, who first, put out, just he collected all the Agudas of Shas with like a few comments here and there. That's called Hakosev in the In Yaakov. Like the original person who wrote the In Yaakov, what he wrote. He just collected the Agudas of Shas and wrote one comment once in a blue moon. So that the Kosev, he thinks that, no. He, I guess, thinks that's like a little too, gashmiyistic of Shat. What do you mean? Your mom in the world, but then your mom in the world is Torah. What would the Torah and the Meiri say? Your mom of the world with Din and your mom of the world with Torah. So they'd say each on their own level. You're physically mom of the world with Din and you're spiritually mom of the world with Torah. But you have to physically mom of the world with Din. That's just with my separatius. But the Kosev, the Baal in Yaakov, I guess, didn't like that pshat. He said, no, you know why Din is important? Din is important because it makes people from. That's Moshe's vote. That is chukei Elokim as Torah. So when people come to Din, you teach them the Din Torah that helps them solve their problem, and they get emunah in the Torah, and you teach them the halachos, and they learn Torah. That's why is Din important? Din is so crucial because it brings people emunah, and therefore, even though you think you're just doing Din, you're really teaching Torah, you're really teaching emunah, and you're making people more religious. And that's why it's so important. Rav Kook has a very, very deep approach here, and very fascinating approach here, which we'll have to get back to also. He says, why is Din more important than Torah, and why is Din so crucial? He says, not because it's Din as opposed to Torah. Not because, like, well, you have to be mamed the world, begashmias, before you're mamed in peruchnias, right? That's what the Torah and the Meiri say. Before you teach people about Torah and mitzvos, there has to be people to teach. There has to be a world out there. So you have to have a mice of a ratius before you have a mountain Torah. So therefore, it's part of the Mayan inspiration, Gashmias. The Kosev and the Inyakov, Bedochak says this is also bringing people closer to Torah. Some people, you can't be Makarev. You get the Shir, you can be Makarev through Din. He must have had a more more optimistic view about how people feel after coming to Din than that I've seen in our Doros. The Rav Kook says, no, it's not that Din is so important compared to Torah. Rav Kook says, Din is so important because without Din, the Torah is not the proper Torah. He says, the godless of the Torah is not... Now, I'm not sure what the Rav would say about this at all. But he says the godless of the Torah is not that you have a theoretical platonic forms of the world of Torah out there. Theoretical, there's nothing to do with the world. The godless of Torah is that Torah applies to the world and solves the problems of the world and deals with the issues of the world. And therefore he says, you know why Rav Ami and Rav Asi interrupted their Torah for Din? Because their Torah was not complete until they had Din. Because a Torah that's just an abstract intellectual exercise is worthwhile, it's a mitzvah, but it's not the full godless of Torah. The full godless of Torah is a Torah that applies to the world. And what does Din mean? Din means taking the Torah and applying it to the world, making the Torah practically relevant to the world. He says that's why Torah is so great, and that's why Din is so great. Not as opposed to Torah, but as a completion of Torah, because Din is what makes Torah the most glorious and most powerful Torah. Torah without Din is Torah Sogdet. A Torah with Din is Torah Sog Aleph, because a Torah that actually applies to the world is greater than a Torah that's just an abstract intellectual concept. You have to read it inside. It's not clear. It sounds like Agav the Din, he also taught them other things. But Rav Kook also would, of course. As opposed to the Meiri, that's a very good argument. I mean, the Meiri and the Torah are talking specifically about Chol Shemishpat, about Panan Lachaveiro. But the Ein Yaakov and Rav Kook are talking about all practical psak. They're just saying practical psak has advantages more than just theoretical limud. The Rishonim also and the Achronim also have a fascinating debate about what the Emes La'amito means. To us it would have sounded like a literary flourish. Not just Emes La'amito. So that way I'm really serious about it. But obviously that's not the way we normally interpret the words of Chazal, okay? That's the way we can interpret my words if you want. But Emes La'amito obviously means to add something as opposed to just Din Emes. What could be better than Emes? I mean, Din Emes is not so plush in the first place. What could be better than Emes? So Tosfos says here, and all over Shas, Lafuki Din Meruma. He says Emes La'amito means not just MS following the rules, but MS getting the actual truth. Why? Din Meruma means, right, if they fool the judges, right? Someone could come, and they have two Edim, and the Edim are Sheirim, and they're not Mesach B'Yakobi, and they're not Krovim, and they're Gedolim, and Yisraelim, and B'nai Chorin, etc. And everything is Kedasu Kedin, except you have a sense, you could smell, that it's all Sheker. But it's all Kedasu Kedin. So Tosa says, Emes would mean you follow the rules. Right? Emes L'amito means if you sense that someone's trying to put one over on you, you have to investigate it more and get to the bottom of it, and not just follow the rules like bureaucratically. This is what it said in the rules, this is what I'll do. But to use your common sense to know when you have to investigate further and double check things and get to the bottom of it so that you don't get fooled. That's Lafuki Din Meruma. The Beis Yosef doesn't love this, because he says, no. If you do a Din Meruma, that's not even Emes. He's like, Emes is already Lafuki Din Meruma. Right? But Emes means you're not postulating falsehood. Din Meruma is falsehood. So what does Beis Yosef Emes La'amito means? The La is not modifying the Emes. Tosa says, the La'amito modifies Emes. It's not just bureaucratic following the rules. It's actually getting to the right answer. And figuring out who's guilty and who's innocent. So he sort of says, no, La'amito is modifying the Dan. It's the Lishma. Why you judged in Emes? You could judge in Emes Shalom Lishma. Right? I judge the truth. But I judge the truth because I want to get paid as a judge. I want to have a good career. I judge the truth. So different acronyms say, because I happen to like this guy, so I'm happy that the truth came out his way. So you could judge the truth, but you're not judging the truth lishma. You're judging the truth for your own purposes. However, since you're not a Russia, you can't bring yourself to falsehood, and you end up judging the truth. That's not Shitra L'Kodesh Baruch Hu. Shuvu b'Kadosh Baruch Hu, judge din emes la'amito. You judge the truth only for the sake of truth, not for any personal ulterior motivation, but only because you want to do the mitzvah and do the right thing of judging the truth. That's emes la'amito shutuf. That's a shutuf of ma'aseh b'reishis. Just like Hashem didn't create the world for his personal hana'ah, but because in his chachma he saw that it was the emes, the right thing to do. That likewise, a judge is only shutuf b'Kadosh Baruch Hu, he doesn't do it for his personal benefit. But lishma. Okay, so the Beis Yosef says la'amito is modifying done, and it's lishma. Two other very fascinating and almost opposite pshatim I found in the Drisha and in the Maharal, which are very, very fundamental philosophical machlokas here. I think about perhaps the nature of, if not the nature of truth, at least how we get to truth.
Just how philosophically you think God created the world for it to be mated. Does that not work? Meaning, by definition,
No, God created the world to be mated, so, but to be mated to everyone, not only to his friends.
No, I understand.
So therefore, if you want to be mated people by judging the MS and improving society, that's the MS Lamito, where the Beis Yosef.
It's just when you're discriminating.
Just when I want to help my friend, or when I want to get covered.
To exclude somebody else, but not when I actually just happen to enjoy it.
Right, it's a point to enjoy doing the right thing. We discussed that on Tuesday a little while ago. Okay. The Maharal says, what's emes la'amito? He says, well, there are two situations. Sometimes you have a clear psak, or sometimes you have to use your judgment of psak. Says the Maharal de Gur Aryeh, whenever you have to use your judgment of psak, Hashem expects us to do the best we can and use our judgment. Right? Such as Shuda the Daini, or such as a Machlokes Amoraim, right? What they call Shikol Hadas in the Lashon Masech Sanhedrin. When you have to use your judgment, then that's Din Emes. Hashem is telling you to do the best you can to find the Emes, and you've done the Din Emes. But it's not Emes Lamito because you're not sure that you're right. Because you have to use your judgment. When you have objective facts and you don't need to use your judgment, that's emes la'amito, because you're 100% sure that you're right. So what he says is that even though obviously, you know, you have to do the best you can, right? And if you have objective 100% evidence that halachos one way or the other way, then paskin without second guessing yourself. If you have to use your judgment, then use your judgment the best you can and don't second guess yourself. But still he says, emes is if you do the best you can. Emes la'amito is if you're 100% sure you're right because you didn't have to use any judgment, it was all in the books. So there's a higher madriga if it's all in the books than if you have to use your judgment. That seems to be not necessarily a machlokas, but certainly a different philosophical orientation than the Drisha. Drisha here, I think, is the most fascinating shot. It says, what's emes la'amito? And the Drisha says, emes is if you follow the halacha. La'amito is if you don't follow the halacha. Interestingly enough. He says, what does la'amito mean? La'amito of this case. Emes is the general objective emes. Amito is the emes of this particular case. He says, look, not every particular case fits the general rule. Sometimes you have to use your judgment. He says, Adam, using your judgment is emes la'amito, not using judgment like Maharal. Sometimes this is a little bold, and if you ask, like, you know, how do we know how to, like, be inspired by the Drisha, but not become Reformed Judaism. So the answer is, okay, that answer is mefurish in all of Shas and Poskim, if you look at it, you know, all at once. He says, Din Emes is following what it says in the Torah, but we're not always supposed to follow what it says in the Torah, right? Where it says, Lo Charva Yushalayim Bavitsiya El Shadan Bodin Torah, right? The Churban Yushalayim came, so they judged in Torah instead of Lufnim Rishur Sadin. Says, you have to know sometimes how to make exceptions to the rules and use your common sense and your judgment and know not to make exceptions, meaning lefnimi shur sadin is not keneged shur sadin. Keneged shur sadin means the Torah says X and I think I know better than the Torah Y. No, that's called being anti-Torah. Lefnimi shur sadin means the Torah says X as a general rule, but I understand the idea behind it, and if I take the idea that Hashem wants me to do this halach, I know there sometimes have to be exceptions because it depends on the circumstances. That's emes la'amito. Emes la'amito means knowing when to follow the halacha and when to make exceptions to the halacha based on the circumstances. And the churban came because people always followed the halacha and didn't realize that you need to make exceptions in order to keep the spirit of the law. You need to make exceptions to the letter of the law. And that's what he even says. He says, that's what, you know, there's a famous philosophical problem that the Medrash, it's Machlokes Medrashim, says you should listen to the Beis Din, even if they say, Al-Yamin, Shu, Smol, Al-Smol, Shu, Yamin. Even if they tell you right is left and left is right, you should listen to them. In Horios, we see very clearly that if Beis Din makes a mistake, you shouldn't listen to them. Okay, we're not getting into it. It's a whole deal in and of itself. The Drisha says is no. If Beis Din makes a mistake in interpreting the halacha, of course you shouldn't listen to them. Assuming you're Roi Lahora, right? And you have an equally valid opinion. But if Beis Din doesn't make a mistake, they interpret the halacha properly, but they say sometimes we have to make exceptions based on the circumstances, that's what it says, Afilu Yamin Shu Smol Shol Shu Yamin, not if they misunderstand the halacha. But if they say, I will understand the halacha, but the real Ritzon Hashem is that we have to take into account the circumstances also, that even though they're telling you something's the opposite of the halacha, that's the real Tzon Hashem, because the job of the Beis Din to know when to go the Fnimi Shur Sadin and how to apply the and how to apply the halacha. Okay, this is a big. I'm not getting to the. It's been a year. Big Mitzvah Torah. Hold on. So according to this, like, how do you know when to make exceptions to the halacha and when not to make exceptions to the halacha, both in Choshem Nishpat and in everything else for that matter, right? Meaning, how do you know how to properly take into account the circumstances without giving up on your principles and reforming Judaism? Okay, that's a valid and important and crucial question, which even comes up in the in the newspapers with some regularity recently, but even close to home. We're going to leave that for now. But the Ikaron of the Drisha, I think, is fascinating. Lamito, you have to know the case, not just the general rule. Judaism's not about taking general rules and applying them stupidly. Judaism is about taking general rules and figuring out the Ritzon Hashem behind them and knowing how to apply them in each circumstance, and when you need to take into account the circumstances, and doing that skillfully is a very, very sensitive and perhaps dangerous occupation, but that doesn't mean that it's unnecessary. Okay, so that's four pshatim, four mink pshatim, a quote of Amos Lamito. Again, Tosfos says, don't just be a bureaucrat, but sniff out if they're lying or not, if the Edom are lying or not. Beis Yosef says, don't just judge Emes. Judge Emes lishma, not for your personal benefit. Maral says, do the best you can. But if you use your own judgment, it's never the highest madrega. The highest madrega is only if it's objectively poshut and you didn't need to use your judgment. The Drisha says somewhat of an opposite orientation. It says Emes would be always following the halacha, but then you could lead to a churban. Emes Lamito means you have to take into account the Emes Lamito of this case and this person and this time and place. You have to know how to take into account the circumstances, which is a fascinating issue. Continuing in the Gemara. The Gemara says that Admasa Yoshim Bedin Adzman Suda. Right? This is the mucker for the entire Israeli government nowadays, right? When do you get any government services? Until lunch. After that, even that you could ask, maybe they could be Mekayim a little more dutifully. But if you ever want to wonder why everyone's always closed in the afternoon, so yeah, you have a mucker in Shas. Interestingly, Rav Kook here has a very nice ha'ara in Einaya. I would just point out, that he says, look, there are two ways of reading this Gemara. Either it's about the gashmius of the judges, or about the ruchnius of the judges, right? Either the time to learn in the day, or they need time to eat. But what he's basically saying is that, Azman Suda, what we're basically saying is that the dayanim should not dedicate their whole day to the tzibur and serving others and fixing society. Rather, they should take away from that and focus at least half of their day on themselves, whether it's for their gashmias or for their ruchnias or both, meaning the Gemara only meant one thing in Chalashli Bayu, but it's true, they need to eat and they need to learn Torah. So Rav Kook interestingly says here, he says, what's the maskana? You could read the maskana is, you might have thought they should sit all day and only dedicate themselves to the tzibur, kamashul, and they should be selfish also and care about themselves. Rav Kook says differently, he says, no, there's never a kamashul, you should be selfish. The hav minus is you just dedicate yourself to the tzibur and not worry about yourself at all and let yourself fall apart in ruchnis and gashmias. Kamashmalan is that you're not going to be able to help the tzibur if you don't maintain yourself as well? What good is someone who's dedicated to the tzibur if the person gets sick and goes to the hospital because he didn't eat properly? What good is someone who's dedicated to the judging the tzibur and bringing the chukei elokim v'torosav if he doesn't have time to chazer his learning and he forgets the chukei elokim v'torosav and he doesn't know how to paskin properly? So it's really, the maskana of the Gemara is not that the dayanim have to take away from the tzibur for themselves, but that no, the havmina was right. The dayanim should 100% only be dedicated to the tzibur. He says the highest madrega is eved la'am kodesh. Right? It's to be 100% dedicated to the tzibur. But in order to be 100% dedicated to the tzibur, you have to spend half your time on yourself, because it's not called being dedicated to the tzibur, is b'chachma, is b'seichel, and you have to make sure to maintain yourself in order that you can continue to give to the tzibur. Okay, this is also a very I think relevant to a lot of different inyanim, this whole discussion. But getting back to the more strictly halachic issue, was mansuda. Till when did the judges sit? Till lunch. Okay, what does that mean? So let's try to figure it out. Amar chama mikra, what's the pasuk? It said eloch eretz. A is like oy. Right? Shemal keich na'ar sarach vok yochelu. Right? If your king is a nar, is unrefined, and your judges eat first thing in the morning, maybe they go to satisfy their own taivas. Instead of serving the tzibur, you're in trouble. Ashrei cheretz, the good land, shemal keich ben choren, the king is refined, the sarach, the eis yochelu, the vur b'loshti, and the judges eat at the right time, meaning they put the needs of their duties before their own personal taivas. Bigvura below b'shti, bigvura shel Torah below b'shtiya shel yayin, and they judge from the perspective of Torah, not because they already had a big suit and were drunk, and from the light-headed perspective of drunkenness. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, we still don't know when the bonsuit is, so the Gemara tells us. Shar Rishonim Achaludim. The first hour is when cannibals eat breakfast. It doesn't have to mean davka cannibals. What it means is, lunch. Whoever eats lunch in the first hour of the day is basically on the psychological, moral level of a cannibal, because they have absolutely no self-control. All they care about is eating. Shnia machalistim. The second hour is the whoever eats in the second hour is the listim. That's when bandits eat. They, don't have much kvias. Maybe they're always... running around, so they have a early lunch and disappear. Shlish is machal yorshim. The third hour is yorshim. What do we call them? In England, they used to call them gentlemen, actually. But I think here the Gemara is not necessarily having a positive perspective on them. Right, it's people who don't work, independently wealthy people who don't work, so they have nothing else to do in the morning, so they have lunch in the third hour. Revias machal polim, that is when workers eat, who work very hard and are hungry. Chamish machal kaladam, meaning manual laborers. Most people eat in the fifth hour. And imi v'amar apapa revias matzud lakol. Lekaladam. Ah, is it Revis Masud Lekol? El or Revis Machol or Chamish Machol Polam? No, really, most people eat in the fourth hour, because they are their own balabatim, they're their own businessman, you're an independent contractor, you have a store, so you can eat in the fourth hour. Polam will have to work for their employee, and therefore they don't have the leisure to eat at the time when they would exactly want to. They have to, their worker wants them to work more first, so they delay it a little, so they eat in the fifth hour. And Shish is Machal Tamal Chacham. And Tamal Chacham is dedicated to Torah. He puts Gashmius very much on the back burner until the sixth hour. Mikan Be'il Chazorch Eben Lechemes. From then and on, it's like throwing a stone into a pouch. A pouch for a flask that you put liquids in. So there's a Machalok Shishon. Either it means, well, if you throw a stone into it, it just breaks it, meaning it's bad for you. Or Rashi's second shot, and most Mepharshim say, no, it doesn't help you at all. Right? Let's say I have a flask of wine, and it's not full, so I throw a stone in, now it gets full. But it's not really full, it hasn't helped at all. It looks like I filled it up, but it's really not full. So too, if you eat after the sixth hour, it looks like you're satisfying yourself and fulfilling your nutrition, your needs of nutrition, but you're really not, and it's going to be bad for your health. Okay, so it's not going to help. So either it's worse than fasting the whole day, or it's equivalent to fasting the whole day and it doesn't help. Okay, so everyone should make sure to eat Does that mean everyone has to eat lunch before noon?
No, because our rabbi lo amar lo tomi nitzachol tomi nitzachol leslamba.
That's only if you don't eat a breakfast. But if you eat a little breakfast, then it's okay. So don't worry. Even though most of us eat lunch after noon, we're not damaging our health because we have a little breakfast. But if you don't eat breakfast, then you should, well, you should either eat breakfast or rearrange your schedule to have an early lunch. Okay. The Rishonim here debate. Now we have only one problem.
When did the judges sit in din?
Until Zman Suda. So the question is, when is Zman Suda? So when did the courts close? What would you think? What would you think is Zman Suda? What?
So it was like Talmid Chachamim.
Yeah, judges, we hope, are Talmid Chachamim, right? Or else we're in big trouble. So they should be a Talmid Chachamim until the sixth hour. That's what the Rif says. That's what the Rush says. That's what the Poskim say. Till the sixth hour. So they judge for 5 hours. Then they break in the sixth hour for lunch. However, there seem to be two other Pshatim here. The Rabbeinu Hananel says... where did he say this? Admasa Yoshvina Zman Suda Vasikna Arba Zman Suda Lakolhi. Now it's not clear what he means, but he says you judge until Zman Suda, and we conclude that the fourth hour is Zman Suda Lakol. Sounds like you only judge for 3 hours in the morning until the fourth hour, right? That's certainly what the Rabbi Nachmanal sounds like, and the Maharsha in the back also holds this way. The Maharsha says there's a Targum Yonason that says that after they bring the Talmud Shel Shachar, the judges eat and close the court. Which is, and that Targum Yonason there holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that it's the fourth hour. So the Maharsha thinks of the fourth hour. The Rach sounds like it's the fourth hour. The judges, it sounds here like the judges eat Sudas Kol Adam, not Adzman Suda means the Suda of Kol Adam, not the Suda of Talmid Chachamim. It's not clear. Aren't the judges Talmid Chachamim? So it could be what? Yeah, so it could be the Rabbi Nachmanal thinks the litigants. When do they judge? Until it's time for lunch for most people, for the litigants. After, when it's time for the litigants to go to lunch, then they close the courts because it's better to do things first in the morning after people have lunch, then they get rowdy, they get drunk, it's not a proper time anymore. So it could be that Rabbi Nachmanal says until the litigants for Stam Adam, as general rule, go to lunch, while the Rif and the Rosh and the Poskim say no, until the judges have to eat lunch. Let the litigants worry about their own schedules, until the judges have to eat lunch at the sixth hour. The only strange thing here is the Rambam. What did the Rambam say? When do the courts judge? Till Chatzos. The problem is Chatzos is too late for lunch, right? You have to eat in the sixth hour after Chatzos, Kazarg Evan Lachamas. So what's pshat in the Rambam? So here there are two pshatim in the Rambam from what I've seen. On the Makor sheet, the Bach says, and many Akronim say, the Rambam's Lavdavka. He doesn't mean that they judge until Chatzos. No, then they can't have a proper lunch. Then they can't eat Sudas Talmud Chacham. What he means, they judge until close to Chatzos. After all, Talmud Chacham eat in the sixth hour. You can eat in the beginning of the sixth hour, in the middle of the sixth hour, in the end of the sixth hour. So it means they judge until they have time to have a lunch before Chatzos. That's what it means. Till Chatzos Lavdavka. It means if the judges say, for us it takes us 20 minutes to eat, they stop 20 minutes before Chatzos. If they say, for us it takes us 30 minutes to eat, they stop 30 minutes before Chatzos. Okay. In which case, the Rambam is basically the same as the Rosh and the Rif. The Kesef Mishnah thinks that maybe the Rambam is... it's not exactly the same, it's just more or less the same, right? If you have here, you have the Rach till the fourth hour. The Rosh and the Rif till the sixth hour. The Rambam, Lefi the Bach, and others until near the end of the sixth hour. That's what it's got. So you don't break at the beginning of the sixth hour. You break near the end of the sixth hour, so you'll have time to at least start your lunch. But the Rambam, according to the Kesef Mishnah, says no. Seems to say Chatzos Mamish, and he says it's not to let anyone eat lunch, right? Meaning, no one eats lunch at Chatzos. You have to eat lunch before Chatzos. That it's Zman Suda doesn't mean until they can eat lunch. No, it means until the Zman Suda is over. Ad va'ad bechlal, they have to judge through the Zman Suda. What is pshat in this? He's not 100% clear, but I think if the Rambam is davka, I have no intuition whether the Rambam is davka or lav davka, although there's a famous Rav story where the Rav was once giving shir. It was right if they published the Rambam La'am. You know the Rambam La'am? It's like Mesada Rav Kook. Okay, with like vowels with easy papers. So the Rambam, I guess the Rav, someone brought it to the Rav. The Rav says, this Rambam, we have a problem with the deek of the Rambam. He says, and I know in that new Rambam, says in the bottom, lav davka. Says, fine, the Rambam's lav davka, everything's lav davka, let's just close all the sperm and go, there's no point. we close the Rambam, throw the Rambam in the garbage. The Rav did not like this idea of the Rambam being lav davka. Okay, I don't know if he's right, but if the Rambam is davka, then what's pshat? It's not until, it's ad v'ad bechlal, it's not until you eat your meal. It's past the time of eating a meal. So what's pshat? So it could be the Rambam had the tremendous chumra. He learned the pasuk. I'm not going to get into the big debate over what boker means according to the Rambam, but if you look at the pasuk, eilach na eretz v'sarayach b'boker yochelu. Eilach eretz v'sarayach b'boker yochelu. The judges cannot eat in the boker at all. Obviously, the judge would have to have a little breakfast. Otherwise, they would get sick and die. But maybe the Rambam read this pasuk as saying that no, judges have to be a higher standard than everyone else and can't even eat sukkas talmud chacham. They can't eat b'boker at all. Not the boker of Talmud Chacham, not boker of Poland, not boker of Kol Adam, certainly not the boker of the Yorshim and the Ludim and the Yorshim and the Listim and the Ludim. The judges have to judge through the whole Suda to show that no, regular people, even Talmid Chachamim, should break for a normal Suda. But we have to be so dedicated. We have to be so dedicated that we judge through the time of Suda to show that, to show that our dedication to our din and our priorities are that the din and the osim tzar ketzibur, this is the flip side of the Rukuk I mentioned earlier, the osim tzar ketzibur, the mam of the eretz of din, has to overrule and be docha even the suda of Talmud Chacham. We're going to eat shalobas man suda in the time after the boker. If the Rambam and Davka, that's a special chumra of dayanim, ad va'ad bechlal zman suda, until, basically, how long do you have to judge? Till you miss lunch. You can eat a late lunch, but you have to judge till you miss lunch, because a judge who's being mamid eretz has to miss lunch. He has to say, no, what I'm doing is more important than my personal need. That would be tremendous chumrah. And then the adva'ad bechlal, you have to judge until you miss lunch. If the Rambam's davka chatzos, that would be a big chiddush. Okay, continuing the Gemara.
What does that deserve?
Yeah, so the Kesavish says they have to eat a little breakfast. On the way to court in the morning, they have to have a shugi bar. No, that's only for capital cases. In Stama, they're not judging capital cases. Correct. The Bach has a great kasha. He says, then it's Samach Laminka. They can't eat lunch Bechla. They can't eat lunch then either. So that's Taka, good question. So it could be, no, Taka, they have to wait an extra half hour and then daven. They have to wait half hour plus the time it takes to davening. Maybe they have to wait very long for their lunch. The other option is they can have a snack, but they still have to wait for their meal.
In which case they should be so 6.5 hours they can do. I mean, why sit around waiting?
Right, that's an excellent question, but it's enough to just miss lunch. But you're right, then their half hours, maybe the half hour is when they chazer their ketosis and acetosis. It is a good kasha, but it's not a pircha.
And it's kasha that daven if they don't have.
That would be another question. The Rambam doesn't like davening mechi gedola, so that you're right. That is especially the Rambam says not lachachila davening mechi gedola. So all judges should daven mincha not lachachila, or they should fast till 9.5 hours, even after shugi bar. That's talk a good kasha. I'm not personally promising the Rambam's davka. It's just would be a very big chiddush because everyone else is about eating. The Rambam is saying you davka have to miss lunch to show your priorities and your dedication. That would be a big Gomer. The Gomer then says, here we get to actual halacha. Meaning some of these are also halacha, but in an agadah, as a side point of the agadah. Rav Adi Bar Abba, mispalad v'losa beis ha-merchas, you're allowed to daven in a bathhouse, may say, anechle beis ha-merchas, makrush v'ni adam, omnil v'ushim yisham, mekru v'tfilo, ve'ein tzarch l'mashel shalom. But we have some kashrus from the Braisa that there are three parts of the bathhouse. There's the outer room where everyone has clothing, and then you're allowed to learn and daven, and obviously give shel shalom. Umeini achtfilin, you're allowed to put on tefillin, and obviously being so close, you don't have to take them off. The middle room, a room of mulavushim. I mean, there's an outer room where people just rested after the bath. Why do you have to rest after a bath? Because part of the bathhouse is more like a spa jacuzzi experience in those days, right? The Zaya, right? And everyone knows if you ever go and sit in a hot tub for longer than the little sign says you're allowed to, then you have to rest afterwards. It tires you out. So part of the bath experience was this Zaya. It was very important to refuah. Those of us who went to the Shinchav Chas in the afternoon know how Zeya is a crucial part of refuah in the old days, right? And even nowadays, old people still go to the Shvitz. And even young people in Scandinavian countries still go to the Shvitz. So there was an outer room where you have to rest in your clothing. So that you could do everything. Then there's the middle room where you got dressed and undressed, right? So some people were dressed and some people were naked. Yeshav shelo shalom is a compromise. You can say shalom aleichem, but ain't shalom mikur tefillah. But you can't daven and learn. But ain't ochol tefillin. You don't have to take off your tefillin. But you can't put them on. Status quo. Mustered in the room, the middle room where everyone's naked. No, ain't shalom shelo shalom. That everything's off. So you can't say shalom aleichem, and obviously in tzarich lomer mikur tefillah. The chol tefillin, you have to take off your tefillin. In tzarich lomer, obviously she ain't a manichum. You can't put them on. So what's the kasha? How can you say you daven the samerchatz? It's also to daven the beis samerchatz in the inner or even in the middle room. Ki ka'amar, ravad barabba, and it's obviously didn't mean the outer room, because then that's no chiddush. The outer room is just a regular place. Ki ka'amar, mechashim o'adam, so man, an empty merchatz. That's all. If there are people in the merchatz, if the merchatz is empty, then there's nothing wrong. Amar, yosef, rechanina, merchatz, amar, afishim o'adam, besakishim, afishim o'tsah. No, don't we know that a merchatz has a certain, I don't want to commit myself here, let's say mios, is certain impropriety or disgustingness about it. Even if no one's there, you still can't daven. And just like a bathroom, even if there's no soa there, you still can't daven. He meant a new, meaning a used merchatz that's empty, you're not allowed to daven. He meant a new bathhouse that no one used yet. But didn't, it wasn't this an open question to Ravina. If you build something to be a bathroom, right? Like you're building a house, you're a kavlan. So you say, okay, this is the bathroom. But no one ever used the bathroom there yet. So that's Zimon Besakisa. You're just like Maktish it to be a bathroom. Does that count? Does that make it a bathroom and usher or not? The law of Shita. And it's a vital ishta. So it's a vital ishta. How could Rav Barav be makel? Is the machlokis between him and Ravina? Lavud in the merchatz, isn't it? This a question because Ravina's ibaya about a besakise applies equally to merchatz. Lo, no. Dilma shani besakise nimayis. No, besakise is an ibaya that even a brand new unused besakise might be usher. But a merchatz is vadeh mutter. Beis hakise is an ibaydul ifshita. A merchatz is vadeh, and we talk about the chumer for reasons we won't get into now. But a merchatz is lekula. A new merchatz is no problem. And our girsa is demois, because a beis hakise is disgusting, implying that a merchatz is not disgusting. What's Tosfos' girsa? Shani, beis hakise, did not be zuama, it has a lot of, anyone have a good word for zuama? Filth. Good. Has a lot of filth, implying that a beis hamerchatz has a little filth. Okay, good. Now, of course, he's talking about a used one. But even the new one, since it's already called by the name that we associate in our minds with the filth or disgustingness of a used one, so it's already a merchatz is beseder, because it's not so bad. Rabbi Sakisa is the Bible ifshita, and many rishonim and we paskin in the Shulchan Aruch lechumra. Okay, this is fairly pasha. There's just one fundamental hakira, usher. One fundamental hakira about merchatz, which is mefurish in rishonim. You don't need any modern day lamdanim to come up with it. What is the hakira in the rishonim? Well, let's start with something obvious. Why is a beis hakise usher? Because what's wrong with beis hakise? Right, reach, because of the filth, right? Because of the dirt, because of the filth, zuama. Right? Now, why is a merchatz usher? So, from the lashon of the braisa, what would you think the problem based on merchatz is?
is the rum, is the nakedness. Ah, did we ever hear that nakedness is a problem for brachos and tefillos? Yes, of course we did. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows you're not allowed to daven and learn in front of, for you're not naked this amount of even tefach v'isha erva v'chuli, right? Everyone knows that that nakedness is a problem. Okay, so if I'm stam standing on the street, if someone happens to be, and it doesn't have to be naked, right? It could be, a girl in a short skirt. All right. If someone happens to be a room in front of me, I can't daven. And if no one's there, I can't daven. Meaning it's a din, the actual nakedness being right there. The chiddush of the merichatz is that since it's a place which is miyuad for nakedness, the whole point of a merichatz is to be naked. Therefore, even when no one's there, it's a place of nakedness, and a place of nakedness is not b'kavadik for Mikra and Mishnah, Mikra and Tefillah and Tefillin for, Haskaras Hashem. Right? Because it's a place of nakedness. That's one possible shot. In which case, what would the conclusion be? If a woman goes to the mikvah, right? So that's a place of nakedness, so what can she not do? Say the bracha. Okay. But what does the Meiri bring down machlokes about? What's the other day in the Meiri here? He says that yesh omrim that you can't make a bracha in the mikvah. Oh, you have to make a bracha ala tefillah. You make the bracha in the waiting room. You make a bracha in a different room and then go to the mikvah. And it's not a hefsek. But the Meiri says, what's the other day? The other day is, we're all Ashkenazim here? Right? So the other day is what all of us do. Meaning, not us. Mirshav Hashem will come. Soon, and then it'll be us also, but all our wives do, right? All Ashkenazic women make a bracha in the mikvah. Okay, so how does the Meiri justify that? He says, really, merchatz is the same as Beisakisei. The reason for the Yisra merchatz is not because of the nakedness, it's because of the zuama, because of the filth. Why do you mention nakedness? Well, the nakedness brings about the zuama. In a place where people hang out in their clothes, there's not a lot of zuama. In a place where people are naked, if people are naked, so all the dirt on their bodies can come off, right? Usually, especially in the old days, people didn't shower every 5 minutes, right? So the more covered a place in your body was, the more dirt collected there. All the dirt would come off your whole body. And B, it was a big schmitz, right? And so you would sweat, and all the dirt would come off in the sweat, and it would be full of steam, and it would be full of filth. So he says, basically, you don't need any briskers to come along. The Rishonim, the Iri, and the Rabbeinu Manoach. This seems to have been a popular hakira in Provence. The Meiri and the Rabbeinu Manoach on the Rambam have the same hakira. They say is the Isser Merchatz because of it's a makom of a rome. It's a makom miyuat for nakedness, and therefore it's a problem of like lo yirelcha ervas dovar. It's a super problem of erva, or because it's a makom of zuama. No, it's like a bathroom. It's like a bathroom. It's a makom. It's a makom with a lot of zuama because people schwitz and wash off all their dirt there. What's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is mikveh tzonenim, right? Is, assuming we're rishonim, are mikvehs which are cold water, no one shvitzes, right? So if the problem is of nakedness, then it's usher levarich. And if the problem is because of zuma, then it's mutter levarich. Who says mutter levarich? This is Rabbeinu Manoach. This is Eish Rashba. This is one Yesh Omrim in the Meiri. I forget his exact lashon. And this is what all the poskim say, or most of the poskim say, as opposed to there's another Yesh Omrim in the Meiri who says it is Asur Levarech. So that's the Chakira. Is it a different kind of Zuama Beis Hakisei, or is it because of nakedness? Nafkamina. What if you have a place with nakedness? Like a cold mikvah, without nakedness, without zuama.
anyone want to be medayik if Rashi and Tosos have anything in our sugya that might imply what they hold in this chakira? No one? You guys don't like Rashi's and Tosos? What's the difference between a Beis HaKisei and a Merachatz? In the last line in our sugya? What does Tosos say? What's the difference? A Beis HaKisei is? A Beis HaKisei is Nafish Do'amah. As opposed to a Beis HaMerachatz, which maybe has a little less Do'amah. So I think it's Meduyik, if you look at the Girsa of the Gemara, again, Girsa is not really enough Gemita, right? Girsa, in the beginning of Daf Yud Amud Beis, if you send it to the Zuma, then we say Beis HaKisei Nafish Zuama. Beis HaKisei has more Zuama. Beis HaMerchatz would have less Zuama. I think that would work well for the majority of Rishon, the whole Beis HaMerchatz Rishon Zuama. But if you take, this is Tosos, but if you take Rashi, what's Rashi? Rashi says, and let's just speak it out, right? Beis HaKisei is Nafish Zuama, while Beis HaMerchatz has less Zuama. That's Tosos. Rashi says, Beis HaKisei, Dimois is disgusting. What's the implication? Merchatz is not Maus. So it could be that Rashi would say, no, Beis HaKisei is disgusting, it's dirty. Beis HaMerchatz is not disgusting, just people are naked, and it's not mechubad if people are naked. Well, to maybe Tosas is yourself, Beis HaKisei is a lot of Zuama. Beis HaMerchatz is a little Zuama. Meaning for Tosas, Beis HaKisei and Beis HaMerchatz are the same thing qualitatively. Just quantitatively, one is more Zuama than the other. For Rashi, maybe they're qualitatively different. Beis HaKisei is Mos, it's disgusting, it stinks, it's dirty. HaMerchatz is a clean place, it's just a place of nakedness, and therefore it's not Kavod Hashem. That could be Rashi Lishitase in, I apologize, I didn't put this on the Koros, but in the famous story of the being asked philosophical halakha question, the Merchatz in Avodah Zarah Daf, or Leo in Avodah Zarah Daf, Mendalad Amud Beis, Rashi says, Ein Meshivin Dvar, third Rashi in Azar Mendalad Amud Beis, 44b, Ein Meshivin Dvar Tor of Merchatz, you can't answer a halakha question in Merchatz, El Hisha Adam Omi Orim, because you're naked. Now, okay, you have to be dying. After all, even if no one's naked, you can't do it. But maybe what does Rashi emphasize? He doesn't say it's a mokum zuama. He says because people are naked. So that would work well. Lishitase, right? Lishitase of Rashi in Avodah Zarah Mimdalar Beis Lefi Sha'adam Omeid Arum. When Rashi says, why can't you learn Torah the Merchatz, he emphasized the nakedness, not the Zuhama. So maybe Rashi would ask for saying the Bracha of the Mikvah, and the Tosos would not for saying the Bracha of the Mikvah. I am speculating and suggesting.
Because he is naked?
Rashi...
There's a difference between he
correct.
And his
so that's mind. Why that Rashi is sort of Ian a little anyway, because Rashi there has its own problems, because what do you mean because he's naked? Even if you're clothed, since the place of nakedness, you can't enter Torah. So I admit that Rashi, I'm leaving that Rashi with Sarkin in the Diuk, but nonetheless, he does emphasize the theme of nakedness. Agav, in terms of Halacha L'maisa, what do you do with our modern day mikvahos? Our modern day mikvahos, what's the problem?
They're spotless.
No, but they're spotless, but they're hot. What about the fact that our modern day mikvahos are hot? So if our modern day mikvahs are hot, maybe even the Zuama side should ask for saying a bracha in the mikvah? Valid question, right? I think it's a valid question. Okay.
What?
Aha, good. So, let's just see. What about, parentheses, what about a mikvah, right, of chamin, kimo mikvahos, Shalonu. So this, you should know, is a tremendous machlokes achronim. The Mishnah Berurah, we got a machlokes achronim, I think I put it in brackets. Rav Ovadia paskins, the Mishmura says this is machlokas, right? The minhag svarad is that it's usher because there's zuama. Usher because there is zuama. Ah, our mitzvos are spotless. Okay, valid question. The minhag ashkenaz, and therefore svardi women go to a different, say the bracha before they total. Minhag ashkenaz is that it's mutter because you don't sweat or clean your body in the mikvah. Meaning our mikvahs, you just ain't coming, they're hot. But they're not hot to clean off all the dirt. They're not hot like when you wash dishes in hot water to get off the caked on dirt. And they're not hot to make you schwitz. They're hot because we're all spoiled nowadays and we don't like to feel cold water. But all you do is take a quick dip when you're already clean. So what kind of zoom is there? You're already clean and you're not schmitzing. What kind of zoom is there? That's what the Divrei Chaim, the Sanzer Rebbe says. So the many Ashkenaz to assume that even our hot mikvahs are like cold mikvahs because they're not places where you get rid of your dirt and schmitz. The Sfaradim are machmer on it, even though our mikvahs are spotless. They say still, since it's hot water, that's still called zoomah. Okay, yesh, yesh lion. Maybe if you want to be a little, go out on a limb, okay, then you would keep giving shir past 11 o'clock. It could be, I'm going out on a limb here, but efshar that maybe another nafkamina between the manda rezuama and the manda amar of nakedness would be, what if the opposite case? What if you had zuama, but you didn't have nakedness? Now, it could be there's no heikhi tendency. Could be, unless your whole body's naked, you're not going to make so much dirt. But what about places where they would have a schmitz, but people wear a bathing suit? They're very tsanua there, you know, there can be places like that. What if you have a place which is a real schwitz where everyone, you know, gets a lot of zuma, but people aren't comfortable being naked? So it could be that if you were machmer in our mikvahs, because people are naked, but if people wear bathing suits and they're not naked, it should be okay. But if you're makel in our mikvahs because no one schwitzes them up, then in a place where people do schwitz it up, maybe it would be usher. Okay, that's just a speculation.
I mean, more practical. What if you have in the middle of the summer, everyone's running around, there's people running around, they're all schwitzed up, and then they stop and come into a room, a hot room, and daven?
Okay, I think that's one of the kind of cases where you say, Chazal made certain rules, and they only made the rule in Americans. But that's a valid concern. I absolutely agree. Agav, I'll just point out that when it comes to the cheder emtsoi, all right, it's already very late. What? Okay, I'll just point out a pashat machlokas. You blame Tovia, not me. About the ched. What about the cheder mitzoyi, the mikvah? So here, I think we have three deos in the achronim. What's the problem with the cheder mitzoyi, the mikvah? Now, what would you think the two deos should be?
There is someone without clothes.
Right. How about the cheder mitzoyi? So, what are the two most famous deos? The Prima Gaddim says, right? Prima Gaddim says it is a lower level of zuama. Why is the cheder mitzoyi? It's a medium level of zuama. Why is it a medium level of zuama? What's the zuama in the cheder mitzoyi? The Eliyahu Rabbah says there is no zuama in the cheder mitzoyi. He says no. Let's say better. Says the Prima Gaddim, that's fine. We'll do this. He says it's a lower level of zuma. He says since people come out of the dirty schwitz into the cheder mitzoyi to get dressed, they bring in half the zuma with them, so it's a half zuma. So that's why it's mostly do half things and also do half the things. The Prisha says that it's a lower level of Makom Abram. The inside room is a place where everyone's naked, so it's a high level of a mukum erva. The middle room is where half the people are naked, so it's a lower level of mukum erva. However,
I can understand it's not as hot. Something's not as hot as not as hot. But if only half the people are naked, there are naked people in the room.
Ah! Now the nafkamina being as such. According to this, what's the nafkamina? What about an empty cheder emtsoi? So says the Bach, usher. An empty cheder emtsoi is usher. Why? Because it's a ze'er anpin, it's a miniature of the cheder pnimi. If the cheder pnimi is a place with tons of zuma, this has a little zuma. So okay, it's a makom, even when it's empty, it's a makom of medium zuma, and therefore you can't daven there. Ah, if the the inner room is a place of total nakedness, this is a place of half nakedness. So even if no one's there, it's a place of nakedness. Right, remember, even in Baruch that has no Adam. However, says the Beis Yosef and the El Yorabah, the Beis Yosef and the El Yorabah actually is on the side of Zuma. But he says, Zuma's in the inner chamber. I never heard of this prima gutta svara. There's Zuma goes to the middle room. There's no Zuma in the middle room. Wait, people don't track that much Zuma with them. So says Beis Yosef and the El Yorabah, he says, there's no problem with the makom, but practically some people are naked. Right? Meaning there's no problem with the makom. It's not a makom anything. It's an innocent makom. But lemaisa, half the people are naked, and if half the people, if even one person is naked, then you're not allowed to daven. Nafkamina being, says the Beis Yosef implies, he implies very strongly, and that it's mutter daven the cheder mtsoi if it's empty. Because the cheder mtsoi is not a chalos in the mukkel. It's only a hechitimtsi of people. So this is the fundamental hakira. Is it a chalos in the mukkel, just the same chalos in the cheder pnimi, just a lower level, or is it just a hechitimtsi? It's not a mukkum at all. There is no such mukkum as cheder mtsoi. This is just the halachas of what to do if you're in front of a naked person. There's no special bit of cheder mtsoi. The answer is, in front of a naked person, you can't daven, you can't learn, you can't say shalom aleichem, and you can't put on tefillin, but you don't have to take off your tefillin. Just a hechitimtsi. Theoretically, you might say that this could also be an afkamina, maybe, for the machlokas rishonim about hirhur, the cheder mtsoi. It's before Shemesekas brachos, that it's also be maharhir with the retor in the cheder pnimi. Even hirhur de retor is also in the cheder pnimi. What about hirhur in the cheder mtsoi? According to the Beis Yosef Mil Rabba, then you would have to for sure say, like the Ran, that it's mutter. Why? Because it's a hechitimtsi of being in front of a naked person. Everyone knows, if you're in front of a naked person, what's the drasha? Lo yirbecha ervas? Dibur asur, hear her mutter. Right? Even if you're looking at 100 naked people, you're still allowed to be mahar her b'divrei Torah, just not to be medaber. That's the difference between the bathroom and in front of someone who's not dressed. In the bathroom, you can't even be mahar her, mevolos mitunachos, in alleyways where people pour their chamber pots. But in a place where people, let's say, where the women aren't dressed properly, or you're in the locker room where where your friends are completely naked, then you're not allowed to talk to Ritor, you're allowed to be hired to Ritor. So Pasha Hero should be mutter. If you say it's just a lower level chalos in the makom, then it's not Pasha. I don't know. This lower level chalos in the makom, which you're allowed to keep your tefillin on and you're allowed to say shalom, how about Hero her? So then, let's say, could go either way. You could go either way. You could say, like the Ran, that Hero her is mutter, or like the Rambam, as the Achronim explain, almost all the Achronim are Medayik, that he thinks Hirhur is usher even in the middle room, so that it can go either way. It's hard to tell. So at the lower level, what do they matter, what do they usher, where do they draw the line? I don't know if we have a clear intuition one way or the other. Okay, so that's the basic dinim of a Merchatz. What we didn't deal with yet is why the Rambam leaves out. What does the Rambam leave out from all the Gemaras we've had until now? He quotes does he quote the dinim of putting on tefillin, taking off tefillin? That you can put them on in the outer room, in the middle room you can't put them on but you don't have to take them off, and in the inner room you have to even take them off? Does he quote them Hilchos Tefillin? Yes. Does he quote the Isser of davening and learning in the Beis Hamikdash in Hilchos Kriyas Shema? Yes. What does he not quote? What does he not quote from this Gemara? What does he leave out? He leaves out Shilah Shalom, and he leaves out Shilah Shalom, and therefore, in Hilchos Kriyas Shema, he never mentions the difference between the middle room and the inner room. Because what are the two differences in the middle room and the inner room? Tefillin, which is Hilchos Tefillin, and Shilah Shalom. If he leaves out Shilah Shalom, then he doesn't have to mention the difference between the middle room and the inner room. So maybe we'll just leave that off. Come back to that. I'll just point out there are between two and four differences between cheder pnimi and the cheder emtsoi. One is the Gemara says what does the Gemara say? Chalitza's tefillin, right? Right? You don't have to take them, you have to take them off in the inner room. In the middle room, you keep them on. Two, the Gemara says, Shela Shalom. Three, according to the Ran, hear her, is Mutter in the middle room. In the middle room, but Usher in the inner room. And four, Lefi, the Beis Yosef, and the Elio Rava, Ain Sham Adam, if it's empty. It's Usher in the inner room. It's Mutter in the middle room. The Rambam only mentions the middle room in Hilchos Tefillin. He says, in the middle room, you can't put your tefillin on, but you can leave them on. In the inner room, you have to take them off. He never mentions the inner room and the middle room in Hilchos Kriyas, in Hilchos Tefillah. In Hilchos Kriyas, I mean. Now, he knows there's a difference. He mentioned Hilchos Tefillin. Why didn't he mention Hilchos Kriyas? Simple pshat is he thought there's no difference. Isn't there a difference between here or her? Maybe not. Who says he agrees? The Achron Rambam Dayak, he doesn't think there's a difference about here or her. Maybe there's a difference in terms of it's empty. Who says he agrees? He's allowed to disagree with those shittas. What's the mystery of the Rambam is that the Rambam leaves out the difference of Shelah Shalom, and this is the Tzarechion. You know, if he doesn't want to agree with everything every Rishon or Achron is Bechadish, he doesn't have to. He's also a Rishon. But how can he leave out the Gemara says the difference with Shel Shalom? Okay, we will come back to that Emir Tzashem next time. I know I'm still like running behind. Where are guys up to in the Makoros? What? Here? Is everyone running behind with me? Kafa kafa? What? Okay, so you know what? I will, for those who are not running behind, which is probably the two of you. What? See here. I'll give you, but it's only begging the question though, right? It's not a fundamental solution. Okay, so I'm gonna hold off on Makoros 45 for that, for now then. And maybe we'll all have a chance to catch up. For those who, okay, we'll have to figure out some assignments for those who have more time to learn tomorrow because they don't also have a halacha seder. We'll pick up Mirtz Hashem, not Monday. Monday's Purim in these parts. We'll pick up Mirtz Hashem on Thursday then. Next Thursday. And I'll wish everyone a Freilich and Purim. And everyone is, even if you're not on the gross email list, anyone who wants to join the Chevra is invited from 12:30 till 3 anytime to my house for gross Purim Suda on the 14th. Anyone who's around then, I hope that everyone, at least the gross guys, will be able to join me. Everyone else is optional. I'll just give... What? Gross guys are also optional. True. I'm not gonna be able, there's gonna be sicha about Tainus Esther in the Mishmanish later, so I'll just, a very, very tiny, tiny word in the Parsha. A nice, inspiring idea from the Imre Emes. Everyone classically asks, how come if the Toda is a Shlomim, why do you only have one day to eat it instead of two? And the Mekubal famous answer that everyone knows from a couple of Rishonim Acharonim is that the point of a Tod is to thank Hashem for a miracle of saving you. And therefore, if you have 2 days, you'll eat it yourself. If you have 1 day, you won't have any time to eat it. You'll have to invite a lot of other people, and that'll be Persume Nisa, good for Inyana Dioma. And that's, I think, an absolutely very deep and important idea. The Imre Emes of Ger had a different idea, had an additional idea. He says, why is the Karban Toda only eaten for 1 day? Because the Karban Toda is to thank Hashem for the Nisim he did for us. Al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu. Karban Toda can't be eaten for 2 days because every day has its own Nisim and every day Hashem does more Nisim and more things for us. Therefore, Karban Toda can only last 1 day because it's not enough to thank Hashem now and ride off that for many days. Every day we have to thank Hashem for everything He does for us. Shabbat Shalom.